We'd like to welcome you to the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. I'm your host, Amber, and I'm here with co-host Austin, and we'd like to know, do you have a passion to make a greater global impact? Are you ready to embrace leading with heart and love? If so, join us on this journey to become heart leaders who change the world. Each episode brings heart-centered connection, building stronger relationships, communities, and businesses. Let's take a deeper dive into what it means to be heart leaders. The Heart Leader Podcast starts now. Hi, and welcome to the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. I am your host, Amber. And today I am joined by Kara and Emma. Both individuals are in college right now and navigated through the pandemic at a time when they weren't able to walk for graduation and navigated through just having their teenage lives and into their 20s heavily impacted by what it meant to go through that global lockdown and pandemic. And now they're going from that into some other very serious world events. And since we're talking about compassion this month, we felt it was important to get the point of view from the individuals who are stepping into the world next and inheriting what it is that we're kind of navigating through and coming out of, and have a little bit of compassion and insight for where they're coming from. So thank you both for being here and being willing to share that point of view and inform me and others about what it's like just to be a young person navigating through college, navigating life after a global pandemic, and now with the war and everything else that's going on, helping people like me understand how we can help people who are in your age bracket. So let's start first and foremost with where you are now. You're in college. You just came out of the heels of high school and of something I can't even imagine personally, where you didn't actually have what most other people navigated, in all honesty, with proms and a normal graduation. And not that there really ever is a normal, if I can be completely transparent, but you didn't do what everybody else had really built up that the end of high school would be, and then walking into college. Can you help us understand what that must have been like on the receiving end of that?
Yeah, I would say definitely going into college was super strange, like figuring out how to do everything online. I didn't get the experience so much of getting to meet new people and make new connections through classwork and like going to class in person. I took a public speaking class my first semester of college, and I was giving speeches through a computer screen, you know, and all my classmates were just little squares on my laptop that probably weren't actually listening to my speech. So that was interesting. Definitely, like, the whole connecting with other people part is something we missed out on a lot. Even just not being able to see each other's faces when we go out in the hallway of our dorm room, all of that kind of interpersonal like connections was missed out on a little bit.
For me, COVID actually just like made me have the decision not to go to college, just focus on myself. I feel like being in an environment where it's like not all hands-on and you don't really get the same connection as you usually would in school, it was just something I wasn't interested in. So waiting until COVID was over, and now I'm probably going to start school back in spring when it's normal again. But yeah, I decided to take a different approach to it than everybody else who did go to college.
That's a highly mature and self-aware decision from a perspective of having navigated it. Is there any place where you feel like those of us who were setting the standards for either taking time to not go into a college environment or transitioning into a college environment, or even what you navigated in school, where you didn't feel like we had an understanding, and I say we just because my generation, where we didn't have an understanding of what you were navigating through, where you felt like we could have had more compassion or care or done something different. So if ever something like this happened again, we would have more insight or awareness.
I think something that I've noticed from like my parents specifically, and just like your guys' generation, I guess, is just like the importance of college and getting a degree is very much like necessary to be successful in life in general, or to get a good paying job. College is the path that you have to take to get there. And I think graduating high school in a time where school didn't really feel real kind of made us question whether college was necessary or what the exact purpose of going to school was. You know, if we felt like we could just kind of halfway get through school and do it online and, you know, like cheat on Canvas quizzes and then still get everything, still get the on-paper degree that college gives you, then what's the point in actually putting in the work to get somewhere like where our parents, like, so it opened up our horizon to other options of trade school or cosmetology or even just take, I know one of my friends, it is like bought a van and she's just going to travel the world, you know? So I think it made us take a step back and think, like, is college the only path that we're meant to be on, or can we journey off and just do what we enjoy doing and not, and it doesn't have to be school.
I think we were all shocked when it happened too. Like, yay, 2 weeks off of school, we get a long spring break. And then once it all kicked in, it was like, oh, this is real. Mm-hmm. Like, we're probably not gonna have a prom or do senior tag or graduate, walk across the stage. It was just kind of like a setback. And I feel like personally, it like paused my life. I was like, okay, I have like a break from everything. And I didn't really think of the next step. But over time, obviously, it's getting better and better. But I think it was just a shock to everybody. Nobody really knew where to navigate and what to do.
Yeah. Were you offered resources to help you handle what you were going through?
I don't think so. I feel like because everyone kind of was experiencing it together, you know, like your generation obviously had impacts of COVID too. So I think just because we were all kind of suffering together and going through it together, people obviously felt guilty or empathy for us that we were missing out on things like prom and like walking for graduation from high school. But the mental impact that it had long term on our generation, I think, was kind of looked over just because everyone was feeling really extreme emotions about what was going on.
Yeah, I agree.
So from where you're at now, you could ask for any support in what you're navigating as a fallout? Is there anything that could help you in your next steps? And I'm talking like even you specifically, but as a generational you and what you're seeing or feeling from friends or in social media, you know, part of compassion, I would say, is also being able to know what it is that we can do to help. And I know a lot of people froze because they didn't even know what to do to help, right? It's like deer in the headlight syndrome. I don't know where to go.
Yeah.
But if there is anything that you would ask for as far as help or support or just being compassionate and understanding to where you're going through, what would it be?
I think validation is a big thing, you know, just knowing that we're allowed to be upset, and we're allowed to be hurting that we missed out on, like, events in our life that we will never get to experience again, is just means a lot, especially like from my parents, even just understanding, like you said, just allowing us to be upset and sad about it is refreshing.
I think our school tried to do the best they could. I think we had plans to, if it did get better in late July or something, to walk like on the football field. We had a virtual prom too, which I feel like they did the best they could to make sure that we felt how everybody else felt as seniors. But again, it's just like completely different. Obviously, you're not actually doing it when you're supposed to be doing it or going through the actual experience. Mm-hmm. But I think the school system did the best they could. Obviously, everybody was confused. But yeah, it's still like missing out on a lot of stuff.
I think something that could be helpful is more push, even from like our colleges, or my college specifically, for like interaction between students, or like putting on events to connect people. Now that the mask mandates are getting lifted, even just seeing my classmates' faces is kind of shocking and like new. And so it would be nice now that we're able to be in person connecting with each other to have opportunities and places to go and actually do that, instead of having to independently reach out to people and seek out new relationships.
Yeah, I think our social skills the past 2 years have definitely gone downhill. Like, I think we just lost, like, how to talk to people and how to just walk up to people and, I mean, groups and activities and stuff like that. I just think that it's harder to create friendships or relationships after it also, because we were in quarantine, obviously. We weren't supposed to be around anybody for a good amount of time. So, I don't know. I feel like we both noticed a change in, like, social skills in general.
Yeah, I agree. I think COVID just kind of forced everybody into their little bubbles, you know. You could only really consistently see the people that you had already been seeing. So we all got really close with who we were comfortable with, and it made us almost uncomfortable around anyone else. So even when you are out in social situations, you're with your friends and everybody else is with their friends. And we're not all connecting with each other because we're just comfortable in our own little bubbles now.
I can definitely see that. Do you feel that when we were all in quarantine, social media became the means by which you would connect most often?
Yeah, definitely.
And has that carried over now to where you are in your lives today? Is it more comfortable to still communicate through social media than in person? Or are you easily able to let that go and reconnect in person?
I think it's kind of a mix of both.
Okay.
Like, I wouldn't say we're more comfortable on social media and like unable to release that and talk to new people, but I think it does create a nice like buffer into that, or like, I guess I don't know where I'm trying to go with that, but it's definitely like a space where you're more comfortable to put yourself out there and share your interests, which can help you connect with other people. Like, even I met my roommate last year through a Facebook group page, and that just made it comfortable because I knew her interests. I knew how and what ways we were similar. And so then when we first met in person, we already had stuff to talk about. We already knew what each other liked and what direction we were heading next in life. So it definitely made it easier to connect with someone new. But I don't think that social media necessarily puts us in a box and makes us unable to make those connections.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think it's important to make that distinction because I do hear it get categorized and lumped in. And I don't know how often you hear it. And I don't desire to make this like a generational kind of thing, but often we do hear it put in that capacity. Like, your generation is all about social media. Your dating is through social media. Your interactions are through social media. And that creates a distance between live interaction. But in being close to you, Kara, and in having interactions with younger people, I don't necessarily find that to be the case. So I think it is important to make that distinction. Social media can be a tool, and it can be a very valuable tool. But there are ways that social media can really eat away at the self-compassion that you guys have as well. And so can we talk about how it is helpful for you, like in getting to know your roommate, but also how it can not necessarily be the most valuable tool, but can actually almost be a self-deprecating weapon when you start comparing yourselves to one another, and maybe how you can pull yourselves out of that in times when it happens. Have you ever found that social media can actually make you feel worse about yourself instead of better?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's really easy to compare yourself, whether it's like your body or money, job, anything. It's really easy to compare yourself, especially through Instagram and TikTok. I think a lot of girls go through that also, just before COVID or after. It's just always kind of been a problem through social media.
Yeah, I find that it helps. I have to remind myself all the time that on social media, you're only seeing the best of the best of everyone's life. You're only seeing what people want to put out there of themselves. So you're seeing all of the fun activities that they're doing, all of the pictures that they look the best in, or that they've edited to make themselves look picture perfect. You know, you're seeing all of the most money that everyone's making, but you're not seeing the reality behind all of that, to where that is only the best parts and there are the bad parts that are happening too. So I think when it's constantly in your face of everyone else is out looking great, doing all this fun stuff, spending all this money that you don't know where it's coming from, you're kind of like, oh, like, what am I doing? Just like, I'm just here stinking up a storm, you know, like not having any fun and not doing any of that stuff. And it definitely can make you kind of just become down on yourself.
So what do you guys do when that happens? How do you pull yourself out of that?
I try to limit like who I follow and if it's really benefiting me by following them. Like, is this just gonna make me upset and compare myself and lose self-love for myself, or is this actually going to benefit me? Mm-hmm. And if it isn't, then there's really no point in looking at it or following that person.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, limiting intake is the biggest thing that has helped me. I notice a lot, like with TikTok, there's so many opinions being shared on there, which is a really powerful thing. I think TikTok definitely has its really good pros and really bad cons, because it's cool to be able to share an idea and have so many opinions feeding back in on that, and just be able to communicate on such a large scale with so many other people. But it can get into your head of you're hearing so many other people's super strong opinions, and you're hearing people that are speaking very passionately about topics that you might not know so much about. It's really easy to be influenced and just have your mindset changed by one 30-second video that just you can't stop thinking about, you know.
And you had mentioned, you know, watching the outcome of the war. Yeah. Through TikTok, and how different that is from any generation before. and the impact that can have on your life. Can you dive a little bit into that part, especially when it comes to compassion, right? Here we are watching the outcome of somebody else's life through a social media avenue.
Yeah. I think specifically with the war, it made me, made me aware of how much misinformation is spread and how many crazy headlines you see that you don't really read into the story. Like Snapchat has this feature where they have like an explore page where you can view all these news stories, and there will be crazy headlines on it that you just see the headline and then you think about it all day because it's terrifying about war or about a planned attack or something like that. But then you click on the story and you actually read through it, and it's completely unrelated to the headline that you read. And I think TikTok too, like we would see videos that were like taking place out on a battlefield, and then you would read through the comments and people would be like, oh, this video's from 3 years ago, it's not real, people are just sharing this to scare people, you know. So I think, like, again, a way that we can prevent ourselves from falling into the negative parts of social media is just being aware of like how much misinformation, again, is spread, and just filtering out what we believe. You know, take everything with a grain of salt that you're reading on social media. It's not always facts.
I feel like now that's where we get our information from too, is social media. And I've learned a lot of new things from TikTok and from like Ukraine, what's going on there with soldiers. Like they'll just pop up on my For You page, and it's just like right in your face. But again, you have to be careful with what you take to heart, and I guess make sure what you're watching is true, because I mean that can obviously butterfly effect and like lies and all that stuff happen. You don't know what to believe.
And that does become very challenging for anyone out on the internet, because there is so much out there, right? So how do you know what is true and what isn't true, not only from the news standpoint, but even in your social circles, right? And as you said, people put out there what they desire you to see, and maybe not necessarily what is happening in their lives. So when you do have friends and you desire to hold compassion for them for what is happening in their life, but all you're seeing on social media is the best of their life, how do you connect and hold compassion for whatever is happening in their life when you can't connect and know what's happening? Do you ever find that there's a breakdown in that area where you're not truly able to connect with the people you care about because you don't know if what they're putting out is true, or the sense that you're getting from them is true, or what is that like?
I would say that like within like my close friends, if they're posting things on social media that maybe aren't authentic to exactly what's going on in their life, it's not like they're putting up a wall and pretending like nothing is wrong. Like in reality, I saw the picture before it was edited, or I took the picture, or I know that this situation is happening, and so they're posting this to try to hide that, you know. Like I think when you're comfortable with someone, you share what's actually going on in your life, and we're all pretty aware that like what we're sharing on social media is just one blink in time, and it doesn't represent your entire life. So I don't think friendships are altered by people sharing the best of the best of their life, or like maybe not being authentic to all of the bad things that are going on in their life. They don't have to post all of that on social media in order to look for empathy from their friends.
Thank you for sharing that. because we do hear a lot of that too, especially when you talk about celebrities, right? Not necessarily that I do a lot of celebrity watching, but people bash on celebrities because they only post the positives of their life and they don't share other things. Then they get the cancel culture that we have today. They end up getting canceled for not being authentic or for having a moment where what they truly are is seen out in the public, and then they're like, oh, you've been fake the whole way. But as you just expressed, people who truly know them probably know what was going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's the key point. You don't put everything on social media because that's accessible to everyone. So you desire to put something out there to say, hey, I'm still here, I'm still okay. But you save the authenticity potentially for the people who truly know you. That doesn't mean that those who generationally use, like TikTok, you're not going to put out on TikTok like deep secrets about your life, but you're going to make fun TikTok videos. It doesn't make you a shallow person. And I think it's important to share those kind of things so that we can begin to understand the purpose of the different levels of social media. Because you'll hear generationally people talk about TikTok is like the end. We're headed toward the end. They're not taking life seriously anymore. But what I hear you saying is that's not it. We understand the use of TikTok. And we understand that our friends may make a funny video, but that doesn't mean that they're not having important life crisis. And I can be there for the important life crisis and appreciate the funny video.
Yeah. And I think there are also plenty of people on TikTok that do share a lot of details of their life. But I don't think social media is meant for authenticity. You know, it's every single thing that you see on social media is one moment in time. There's no way that you can capture someone's entire life and their entire emotions and everything about them through social media. That's the type of information that you learn from personal connection. And I think maybe that's a gap between your guys' generation and ours, is that we see social media as like a momentary thing that is only small parts of people's personalities, where like your guys' generation is maybe looking for an entire personality to be represented through a social media page.
I think that's fair. And when we have these kind of conversations, then it helps bridge that gap, right? Because the only way that we're going to have compassion for where you are and understand where you're coming from is to be willing to hear you. And likewise, the other way, so that we can start to understand. Because again, I have no comprehension for what it must have been like to navigate what you guys navigated. I really cannot begin to understand that, but I can have compassion for it and a desire to help you as you continue forward, especially with, you know, now there's the war that's going on. And supply chain is being affected. So inflation is occurring. And the world that you're walking into isn't necessarily full of warm fuzzies and rainbows, right? You're not getting pound puppies or any of the other things that would have been talked about in my era. So what can we do to empower you to feel confident about the world that you're walking into and to fix some of the mess that's been created? And those are the conversations that we need to have, because no matter what we do now, we're not going to be able to fix everything. But if we talk to you and we open the dialogue, then together we can at least set things up in a way that as you walk into it, you know what's happening and you're empowered to do something about it. So the question is consistently, what can we do to help you feel more empowered as you're walking forward?
I guess take what we say like to heart. I feel like being treated like we are grown-ups, and obviously we should have a say for almost everything since we are like the new generation. But yeah, just making sure we feel comfortable with being able to voice our opinions and have that voice, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. I think just like some kind of feedback or encouragement that we do have the power and the potential to make an impact and to make some changes, and just, I guess, trust that we have brains and that we can figure out new ways to fix issues that are going on right now would be motivational. You know, I think a lot of us are kind of in a place where we're like, I can't fix it by myself, and nobody else thinks that I can fix it either. So why even try?
So if you could fix one thing, just pick one thing out of the plethora of things that are occurring right now, where would you focus your time? And it doesn't have to be the same for either of you, but is there a space where you're like, man, if I could go after one thing occurring in the world right now, this is where I would focus my time?
I think the school system, definitely.
Okay.
I think it's outdated, and mental health needs to be more important. We need to focus on what teenagers are going through, not only in school, but when they go home. What's their home life? Do they have time to do homework or study for the next day? Like, just stuff like that, where we need to put ourselves in the students' shoes and not overstress them and make sure they are doing okay. I mean, I feel like our schools try to make it seem like they care, but as students, I feel like we can tell they really don't care. They just, I don't know. Like, I guess just feeling as a student that I am worth something and that the teachers care about what I go home to at night and what I have to deal with, or if I had to go to work, or like simple stuff like that. But yeah, I'm very passionate about that.
I believe we were talking a little bit about this as a whole, just our education system. Part of what I heard is, and I talked about this with another guest previously, the structure has always been, well, it's always been done this way, right? But as Sean said in the previous podcast, that's like one of our biggest pitfalls, is to all say it's always been done this way, because then we can't improve anything. So what you're saying is stop what's always been done, because it's obviously not working anymore.
I think with the internet, and obviously we had iPads in high school, like it's not just paper and pencil anymore. We have so much more that we can learn from, and just putting that towards anything, like, I don't know. I guess it just needs to be updated, our school system, and overall.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's looked over a lot how difficult it is to be successful in our school system when you are struggling mentally. And I think, like, school systems need to be adjusted to put that first. Like you said, you know, what students are going home to, whether they have to work, whether they're going home and mentally just exhausted and can't get out of bed, can't pick up their iPad and stare at a screen for any longer. It makes you really struggle and unable to do schoolwork. And I think if mental health was prioritized, and if students felt like they had a safe space to come to get help for that, it would make a big impact on how successful they were in their schoolwork beyond that. If every class or every teacher placed importance on making sure that their students were mentally healthy before trying to push more information on them that their brains can't even take on, would help a lot.
Do you feel standardized tests hold a place in education, being on the receiving end of that?
I think for us, they did, but I know that it's deep. It's getting less. I know, like, I had to take the ACT to get into college, and the year after I graduated high school, they stopped requiring the ACT on college applications, which I think is a really good thing, because the ACT was something that was really stressful for me and something that I honestly felt incapable of being successful at, because it was so different than what I was learning in school and the way that I was learning how to do things in school. So I think it's really good that they made it optional to take the ACT. I think that's a step in the right direction. And I know our high school district did away with exams for a year and then brought them back because they decided that we needed them to prepare for college. And I think because we missed out on that opportunity to learn how to study and prepare for exams and how to take a test successfully, I definitely do struggle with it in college. I don't have good study skills because I was never taught that in high school. So I think either high school needs to promote not going to college and promote other options, or they need to prepare us better to only go down that path of college.
Okay. Do you have any feelings about standardized tests?
I agree with Kara, honestly. I think it's kind of hard to judge a student off of one test they take compared to their whole, like, year of school. Personally, I'm really bad at taking tests, so when that time came around for me, it stressed me out a lot, just because I'm going to be judged off this test that is time limited, and I keep looking up at the clock and realizing, okay, I'm pretty sure everybody else is way close to being done than I am. It's a lot of stress, and for that to determine where you're placed for the rest of the year, it's just stressful, honestly. It's a lot. It's a lot on somebody, I feel like.
And, you know, they were around even when I was in school, and I felt very much the same way. Diagnosis for different patterns, like my son has ADHD and some other cognitive things, and he is not the best at taking tests, but he's really smart. And I myself, I loved tests. I would not consider myself any smarter than he is. He can do some things so much better than I would ever dream of doing. But if you would put the two of us side by side to take a test, I would come out ahead. And to me, that doesn't seem fair, because if you put me in front of an electronic, he would have it done. He could figure it out in 2 seconds, where I would be struggling to understand how to make this electronic thing work. So I do think it puts kids at a disadvantage to say there is only this way to measure them, instead of having categories in order to allow us to understand how to measure aptitude.
Yeah, I was planning on going to an art school, like, since sixth grade. So obviously math and science and all that, that wasn't my favorite. I wasn't good at it. So making a standardized test, like, more creative for people who want to go into music or art or cosmetology, who know that college isn't really for them, maybe an art school or a cosmetology school or something else like that, opening it up so it's not just based on people who want to be engineers or teachers or scientists. Like, bring in some creativity too.
Yeah. I think, speaking of art classes, I remember specifically enjoying art classes in high school because your grade was measured by your growth throughout the class and just improvement in general. You didn't have to meet a standard by the end of the year. You just had to show improvement from your first project to your last project. And I think if school in general was measured that way, not by meeting a certain standard or checking all the boxes or passing a final exam, and just on showing growth and showing improvement, that could be really beneficial because it would encourage just any kind of effort to grow, you know, and not just, oh, I can kind of just pass by all these assignments as long as I pass the final test. Because of course that appeals to some students because they're better at taking tests, and then it doesn't appeal to other students who are bad at taking tests. And, you know, you were talking about your sister who is a bad test taker, and so she just doesn't do any of her homework assignments because she doesn't care, because she knows she's going to fail the tests, which is going to put her in a bad place for the class in general. But if the class was measured in a way of, hey, you did bad on this homework assignment, but you did a little better on this next homework assignment, you did a little better on the next one, you get an A. That would be really great. I think that would open up a lot of doors for young kids.
I totally agree with that. And I feel like it'd take a lot of stress mm-hmm. off students too. Just knowing they're not based off a number. Like, it's improvement. It's about becoming an adult and getting better and better mm-hmm. instead of meeting the requirements.
Yeah. I think something that I notice from the older generations is criticism on our generation's work ethic. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that our school systems do not promote work ethic. They do not encourage effort. They just encourage you to pass a test, you know? And so I think if it shifted more to that, to where we see that you're putting effort in and that's how you're going to earn a good grade, it would change just even the personality all the way down to the work ethic of kids that are going through school.
And I love that you bring that up, because your generation is a result of whatever my generation taught you, mm-hmm. right? So if my generation doesn't like something about your generation, then we need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, what did we do then that created this outcome? And then the second question is, how much of that is truth and valid? Because do you feel your generation has an issue with work ethic? Or is it just different? Has work shifted? Has effort shifted? With technology nowadays, effort is different than effort was in our day, right? We didn't have the same technology. So effort expended may just be different, and perception may be different. So what do you feel? Do you feel that there's a lack of work ethic?
I wouldn't say a lack of work ethic, but I would say a lack of motivation to work. And I think that comes from a lot of just questioning systems that are already in place. Like, I know I hear about it a lot on social media, just our generation questioning capitalism in general and the way that we kind of work to live and live to work. And it makes us take a step back and kind of be like, why would we do that? And so it's not that we're not willing to work hard for things that we care about, but I think it's just that we're at a place where we're not going to work for anything that we don't care about.
I feel that would be fair. So what do you feel would motivate you? The opportunity to change the systems?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you were given the opportunity to change the education system, even in one space, would that motivate the two of you to step in and put effort into showing what's possible with a new education system?
Yeah, I think even the littlest change would motivate anybody who's who thinks that it needs updated. Like, if we're making an effort to start the process, I know I would love to learn and be on board on that process, and give my opinion, since I am younger, of how I feel like it should work. And I think we should get students who are in high school their opinions and actually listen to them and, I mean, I guess put in that work that they want. Because high school is for the students at the end of the day. So,
yes. And what about the political systems? I know everyone says you shouldn't talk about religion or politics, but those are the two areas that we talk about the most. And ultimately, both of those things really affect your generation, right? This is an unprecedented time where, like, generationally, your era is not drinking the Kool-Aid and saying, okay, we buy into the same political systems that have always been globally accepted. And we're not buying into the fact that just because my family has always been this belief system, that I have to be this belief system. It is changing to where you are stepping back and questioning, is this what I believe? Or is this what my family has told me to believe, or my friends, or, which is an amazing thing to observe, and it makes me very happy, by the way. But what do you feel about those systems and any changes that could be made?
Personally, I think politics make me feel pretty hopeless. I thought about majoring in political science in college, and when I was thinking about that, I talked to a lot of people about it, and I just gathered a lot of opinions from other people. And the thing that I heard the most was, no matter what my beliefs were, and no matter what I tried to go into a position of power to do, I was going to only be able to be successful if I conformed to what people with money were telling me to do. And that essentially, no matter what, if I wanted to get to power, to a point where my voice had any impact, I was going to have to conform to what someone wanted me to be. And with that perspective, I feel like personally, I can't do anything to change it. So yeah, it does. It's definitely kind of a tough topic, and something that I've kind of distanced myself from since then, just because I got to a point where I felt like no answer was right, and no opinion was through and through accurate or true.
Yeah, and I think when somebody has an opinion about, honestly, anything, whether it's through race, LGBTQ, pro-choice, or anything like that, they have their mind set up on it. And it's usually an argument at the end of the day when you're trying to prove your point to somebody and they're trying to prove their point. I feel like for some topics, it's just like all you can do is express how you feel and give the facts, and they all do the same. But I don't think any minds usually change at the end of the day. It's still usually the same opinion that they have.
Mm-hmm. So if you could tell your generation anything about holding compassion for the state that you're in and moving forward, what would it be? Final question.
I would say the best way to be progressive in politics is to listen to everybody. You know, instead, I think we jump a lot to projecting our opinions on other people and trying to change other people, instead of just having an open mind and being willing to listen and accept other people's opinions and change your own beliefs. We're never going to get anywhere if we're trying to force our opinions on everyone else. We have to be willing to adapt and compromise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that at the end of the day, like, your voice matters and what you believe in matters, and to have hope in yourself and to be the change also and create a change with anybody else who agrees with you on any topic.
Love that. Well, thank you, ladies, for being here and being willing to discuss some topics that are not the easiest thing to discuss. So, really appreciate you. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. I am your host, Amber, and I'm here with Kara and Emma, who shared their journey over the past couple of years and their stance on compassion. This month, our tool is Compassion Calisthenics, exercises that you can use to exercise your own compassion within and out toward others. You can find that in the Heart Leader Toolbox at suivera.org. Until next time, we look forward to seeing you in the Suivera community.
You've been listening to the Heart Leader Podcast with your host, Amber, where heart and mind align. Tune in weekly on TransformationTalkRadio.com as we take a deeper dive into what it means to be a heart leader. Ready to take the next step? Join us and over 1 million people worldwide who've united in creating this global movement of love. Become a heart leader for today and tomorrow. Learn more and connect with us at suivera.org.